everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and our Scary Movie Month podcast bonanza continues. Tonight, we're talking Candyman with everyone's favorite Candyman?
Sure.
Adam Riske?
You said it once, so we have to watch it, because if we say it four more times...
Oh, shoot.
We are screwed.
I technically said it twice. I said the name of the movie, and then I referred to you as...
You know?
I wanted to go with the reference to the singer slash rapper, but I couldn't think, you know,
there was
Knock in the Boots, that guy.
Oh, his name was... Oh, yeah, he's like...
Wasn't he?
I'm the Candyman, and I'll melt in your mouth, and I'll melt in your hand?
I don't know. I think it was sexual.
Yeah,
I think.
Chaby, help us.
Yeah, right.
Guy because knows you everything know everything about sexual.
Candyman. So we're talking 1992's Candyman, adapted and directed by Bernard Rose from the Clive Barker short story. Mm-hmm. But of course, first, I want to remind everyone to keep participating in the Scary Movie Challenge. Go to fthismovie.com every time you watch a scary movie during the month of October. There's just under a week left, and leave a 7-word review. Our goal is to beat 3,100, I think, right?
Yeah.
Which is what we got last year. So we got to ramp it up this last week and go crazy.
If we don't get over 3,100, we're starting to take things away.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. What do you think should be the first thing?
I'm not sure. What can we hold over people's heads?
Patreon exclusive. I stream, you stream.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's going behind the paywall?
Yeah.
Shoot. Okay. You heard it here first, everyone. So let's talk about some of our favorite 7-word reviews.
Okay.
I will let you start. I have to keep finding new ones because I keep recording these podcasts.
All right. It's not guaranteed that I'll read your comment if it's about Wishmaster, but I will read three of them. So, three of my favorites are Nathan Norton for Wishmaster. What's Adam's favorite cocktail? Gin and tonic.
Very nice.
It's right there for you.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? It's true.
Get out of town.
I like Hendrix gin and tonic.
DJINN.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah. So, there you go. And then I'll rat off the other two Wishmasters and throw it over to you. Ryan for Wishmaster. Tammy Lauren, when giving 1,000% isn't enough. And Daniel Downing for Wishmaster. This was the best one. I'd rather do Jenner in a movie. And it was so good. Like, the old-time latent comedian in me was just, like, mad that I didn't come up with it. Like,
It's a reference to the movie and a gin pun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It is
really good. Mm-hmm. Dan Snyder says, of Vampire Killers, qu'est-ce que c'est fa fa far better? Which is a great Talking Heads reference. Thank you, Dan.
Oh, I didn't get that. I'm glad you said the Talking Heads thing.
Yes.
Now I feel even dumber.
It's all right.
Knowing the Talking Heads one.
It's okay.
Okay. The Sonya Show for Carnival of Souls. Scary Ghost or Mr. Linden? Ghost, please.
John Hillman of Life Force. Over budget? We'll just cut from wardrobe.
Rob DiCristino, Monster House. Sixth Stage of Grief, become Monster House.
Yes. Robin Buckley of Paranormal Activity. Is nothing happening scary? No, not really.
Adam Rosina from Sleepaway Camp. That's one way to make a flashlight. Or a fleshlight.
A fleshlight.
I'm sorry, Adam.
Will Benson has one of my favorites, not only because it's a Burt Reynolds reference of 1995's The Maddening. Burdening, droppinings, biggening, stinkering, peacening, ovening, shittening.
That's pretty inspired.
Yes, it is.
Okay, Marcus Killerby for Happy Death Day. I thought this too when I watched the movie. Who sets a ringtone for their birthday?
I haven't seen it yet, but
yeah,
I'm guessing there's a birthday ringtone.
I
figured it from context clues.
This is no spoiler,
I read
in the IMDb trivia that the... So in the trailer for Happy Death Day, they played a horror version of 50 Cent's In Da Club.
I remember that.
That was supposed to be the ringtone, but they could, for whatever reason, get the rights to it for the trailer, but not for the movie.
Weird.
Which was weird. So then they did this ringtone thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a Happy Death Day 7-word review also from Grant Malfitano. Happy Death Day. Run, tree. Branch out. Leave that college.
I missed that one. That was really good. Okay, Mike Pomero, who had, he's like the sneaky assassin, Mike Pomero. He's
always
got some of the best ones.
Always.
Hatchet, Dion Richmond has worked with worse monsters.
Inspired.
Yes,
Ty's videotape of Don't Breathe. So cops clearly don't look downstairs anymore.
I like that one too. Yeah. Former Chicago White Sox third baseman Todd Frazier of Rocky Horror Picture Show. This might be one of my two or three favorites of the month. He's lucky. I'm lucky. The banister's lucky.
Jason Stevens of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1956. I'd be done. Cabbage makes me sleepy.
Lindsay Wilkins for the Bye Bye Man. Can't get over the name Mr. Daisy.
This is my last one, so you could do however many you have left. Yeah. Cullen of Cujo. Not horror. It's clearly a dog-ecological thriller.
That one's great. Okay, I got a few more.
Yeah.
Uncle Leo for Halloween 2, 2009. Put some mustard on that dog, Michael. Kersey Resch for Friday the 13th, Part 3. Can't imagine hammock sex being that great. I got a story for this.
Involving hammock sex?
Close.
Oh, I feel weird about this.
This reminded me of something that made me laugh even more, so I really appreciate the 7-word review. In college, when I was in the dorms, my roommate had this wicker chair, and it was really comfortable, and I was friends with this girl who lived in a dorm next to mine, and she came over, and we were hanging out, and it wasn't anything more than just, it was just hot dogs in a ball game with us.
Got it.
And she said to me one night, she's just like, man, I'd really love to fuck in a wicker chair. And then I kind of gave her a look like, are you saying what I think you're saying? And she goes, oh, no, not with you. And that made me laugh really hard and cry. Okay. And
who
then
wants to have sex in a wicker chair?
I don't know. Somebody who doesn't like,
I want to have sex on a sun porch. Like, what are you talking about?
I want to have sex on an end cap in a grocery store. So everybody can see it, and also the people in the back can't see it. Only half the store can see it. Scott Munn for Psycho 2. The police are oddly sympathetic towards Norman.
Yes.
Jeremy Wickett for Halloween H2O. No thanks. I can wait another 20. Two more. Cord Montgomery for Creepshow. Bernie Sanders just wants his goddamn cake. And this,
I want my cake.
I don't agree with this one, but I thought it was funny. I get it, but I don't agree with it.
Okay.
John Kervin for New Nightmare, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, Heather Langenkamp's unrealistic portrayal of Heather Langenkamp. And I just want to bring that up because Shockwaves just did a show with Heather Langenkamp, and I think it's one of their best ones.
It's so good.
It's amazing. Yeah. So if you haven't listened to it, you should listen to it.
I'm currently in the process of putting together my annual list, and that is at the top of the list because it was,
it's really,
she was so great. She said so many just smart, great things.
She's got that England thing where it's just, they can talk forever and everything
and
they
she's
say.
She's saying smart things. And
yeah. And like, I didn't know all of the stuff that she was saying about her career post acting and everything like that. It was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Great stuff. Was great. Yeah. She was great. Mm-hmm. Adam Risky.
Yes.
Have you seen anything scary lately?
Yeah, I have. But before I get into that, I did some work when I was on a quick vacation.
That's right.
In the middle of scary movie month in a place where there is no Halloween. And that is, I was overseas in Hawaii. Overseas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's off the mainland.
You'd be surprised. It's almost like the United States. Actually, it is. I don't know why I said that. Like, nobody knew that. Okay, so I wasn't driving. I was my family had a rental car, so like I was in the passenger seat a lot of the time, and I had tons of time to think of horror movie titles, but Hawaiian horror movie titles.
I like this.
So I'm going to pitch you, just based on the title, you tell me if these are going to get greenlit.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to go in reverse order of what I think is weakest to strongest.
Got it.
All right, I got 10. Child's Poi.
It's okay. I don't think it's getting greenlit.
Okay. The Poo-Poo Under the Stairs. Poo-Poo means appetizer.
Right. Still no.
Okay. Aloha in the Dark.
That is.
Okay. Wave Master.
Yeah, I mean that.
Yeah, it was right there.
That's going to be on Sci-Fi.
Okay. The Mai Tai Man.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's put in turnaround.
Okay. The Luau Thrower Man.
No.
Jaws, The Resort.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's their rebooting the franchise.
Yes. And... Landlocked and Loaded is the tagline.
Perfect.
Mahalo Drive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. These are the two that warranted reading the rest.
All right.
I think these are strong.
All right.
Hulaween, Season of the Wipeout.
Yeah.
No Annette and Frankie in this one.
Okay.
We can't have the Michael. They're the Michael Myers of the Hulaween series.
I mean, I feel like that's like Full Moon is making that one.
Okay.
But I'll see it.
Okay. So it starts in an Italian castle.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
It involves little puppets or little dolls or just anything little that they can sell.
I'm going to read the tagline for this one first, and then I'll unveil the title.
Okay, got it.
He landed in the wrong place. Leatherface and Stitch.
I like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 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 yeah. There's kind of a cross-promotional thing going on there when Disney ultimately, absorbs New Line? Is that happening?
Sure, yeah.
I mean,
that could work.
Now that they're lucrative again with that It money, Disney's just going to swallow them up so they own everything.
Yes.
Leatherface and Stitch, I like it.
I like Leatherface and Stitch.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So what have I seen that
is
good? All right, so this month has been weird in the sense that there's been no like movie that I've loved that's new to me. Like they're all okay or good or not good or whatever. The closest is I saw The Others for the first time.
The Kidman movie?
The Kidman one.
Got it.
I've been on like this big Kidman jag. That sounded bad.
Was it pre-Malice or because
it
of
was
Malice?
Because of Malice.
Yeah.
So
it happens to all of us.
Yes, yes. So I watched The Others finally on an airplane and
the way it's meant to be seen.
It was pretty good. I liked it. The funny thing was like it was my connecting flight, so it was like a short flight. And then the plane was landing and I still had 5 minutes and I'm just like, come on, come on, come on. And then I missed like the last 30 seconds and then I YouTubed it when I got to the hotel.
Well,
but
thank goodness.
Yeah, I liked it. It was good. I'll never watch it again, but I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about right.
I watched another Kidman. I watched Dead Calm.
Okay.
And I think that movie has a Billy Zane problem.
Okay.
Other than that, I was pretty good with it.
Yeah.
Because Sam Neill's great.
Yeah.
And Kidman, I mean, come on.
Come on.
Forget about it. And also, like, because I was in Hawaii and stuff like that, and I went on a submarine tour that day, and then I watched Dead Calm, I got into that headspace where I feel like, on any day where I go on a boat, I feel like I'm an expert about, like, the ocean and boats. So, it, like, is just some weird thing. So, I'm just like, oh, man, they need to just, like, anchor and dinghy the daggerboard. Why aren't they doing that? I'm like, you got to drop the flange and then do this. Go port.
I haven't watched it in a while. I don't remember not liking Billy Zane in that movie. I feel like my dislike of Billy Zane came later.
Okay, so the problem with Billy Zane with me in that movie, for me with that movie, is that he's more obnoxious than scary. Like he's the only thing. So he has to be like really threatening, and I feel like he's just weird and obnoxious. And the thing that drives me crazy, and the reason why I would have just taken a running start at him and knocked him off the boat, which I can't believe they never tried,
right,
is he's got this cassette tape with, he describes it as garage music, and all of it is the worst music I've ever heard. And it's just like,
I have no memory of this.
It's like a guy playing like string guitar and singing like Bob Dylan. But he's just like, two little puppies drinking ginger ale. Bow, 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 bow. And he's like dancing. I'm like, this cannot.
Did someone say ginger ale?
I'll have two. Here's $20. Happy to pay for the ginger ale. So I watched Dead Calm. I started the month off with Species.
Of course.
This was my first like viewing of Species in a while.
Okay.
So I have talked a big game about Species.
I came dangerously close a few weeks ago. I was at a used bookstore.
Yeah.
And they had the novelization of Species. And I was like, I really want to buy this for Adam, but he's going to look at it and we'll laugh for 2 seconds. And then it's just going to be like a thing that sits in his house.
Yeah, it probably would.
So I didn't buy it because telling you about it is probably about the same amount of joy that you... Exactly.
Yeah, it's just as good. Okay, so... After watching it, I think that I was right.
That it's better than Alien?
It does more with the premise.
Okay.
It's arguably got a better cast.
Okay. It's, very arguably.
It's got
very arguably, actually, now that I'm thinking of Aliens cast, what are you talking about?
It's also got a xenomorph that you could feel sorry for and scared of and attracted to.
Yeah, but they don't... You're not attracted to the xenomorph?
Not that much.
What am I supposed to... What's wrong with this boner?
Also, like, in today's day and age, it's interesting to watch...
Why are we comparing these two movies?
Because they're
as
meant to be.
As though Species does Alien better? They're two completely different movies.
You said it, not me. Anyways, the thing is... Okay...
No one has ever watched Alien and been like, that's a subpar Species.
I'm sorry, but Species has gender politics, and you feel what it's like to be an attractive woman in Los Angeles. Mm. You want to have
Alien
sex, but you don't want to have sex
politics
with everyone.
By saying there are no gender politics. Boom!
On Earth, everyone can hear your opinions. And scream.
On Earth, everyone can hear you, but actually...
So, I really like Species.
So. Somebody had a 7-word review, and I'm so sorry that I didn't pull it and that I don't remember your name. And please feel free to take credit for it in the comments under this podcast. It was really funny, and I think it was for Species. And I don't have the exact wording correct, so this may be more or less than 7 words, but it was like, what is Ben Kingsley's career?
That is true. That is very, very true.
It was very funny.
Yeah. I watched Dead Ringers for the first time.
Okay.
And I needed a crisis blanket after it was over. That movie is scarring. Like, when I went on vacation, I feel like bad dropping vacations on people, but years ago I went to the Museum of the Weird in Austin.
Yes.
And they have this exhibit about the twins, the Siamese twins, that they talk about in Dead Ringers. And that made me remember, like, oh, I read about that when I was in Austin on this tour. And, like, for some reason, you know how, like, sometimes you're scared of something, but you're also, like, attracted to something?
Sure.
Like, it draws you in?
Sure.
Stories of Siamese twins is, like, something that always kind of fascinates me.
Okay.
So, like, when he was talking about these two Siamese twins, it made... the movie go from, like, this is just, like, really kind of off-putting to, like, really sad.
Yes.
And, like, by the end of the movie, I was really moved and also kind of, like, really, really weirded out about it. And this is how I want things to be with me and Rob.
If you're into conjoined twins, there is a horror movie that you should see called Stuck on You, and it is terrifying.
That was one of my walkouts.
Really?
At a dollar theater.
It's not good, but it's not the worst, I don't think.
I'll walk out on a whim. Okay, I watched...
I like Dead Ringers, though.
I liked it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorite Cronenbergs. It's not like a top five Cronenberg.
It's not one that I'll put on very often.
But it would be like a top five for a lot of other directors. He's just got a lot of good movies.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Last night I watched Dr. Giggles for the first time in like 25 years.
Yeah, a lot of... I would think you would like that, what with it being made in the 90s and being mostly puns. That seems right up your alley.
The funny thing is it's almost not puns. He's just saying doctor
stuff. Oh, that's true, yeah.
But... yeah, one thing that I realized, I was telling Mike this over the weekend, I think that no matter how good a horror movie is not from the 90s, I would almost rather be watching any horror movie from the 90s. I realized that I think I like horror movies from the 90s more than I like horror movies.
Interesting.
In general. It's weird. I don't know. It's just like such a... you know, trip down memory lane. It's memory lane. And yeah, Dr. Giggles is not like great, but I liked it more than I did
it's
when I
fun,
was like
right? I mean,
10.
Yeah.
And I forgot all about the scene where Dr. Giggles as a little boy is hiding inside his dead mother and then scalpels his way out and then crawls out like a feral possum. And it's amazing.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good revisit.
I just saw it for the first time a few years ago, so I may have only seen it one time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember thinking it was entertaining, you know.
It's good stuff. Yeah. It was a sleepover hit.
Nice.
Back in the day. And then I watched Shocker for the first time.
Okay.
And it's real mixed bag. I like some of it. I thought Peter Berg was entertaining in his Tammy Lauren-ness. I thought that, what's it called? I mean, like, there's just a certain... thing where even if it's not like a great Wes Craven movie, it's still a Wes Craven movie, and it's just kind of fun. yeah. in that sense, because he's got his style, and I like that style. I really didn't like the end. I know a lot of people like the end, where they jump through the TV. And
okay.
I thought that was just so kind of weird looking, because the technology was not really there. But
my memory, though, is like that's what the movie is about. And so when I watch it, I'm always like, oh, wait, it's just the last few minutes.
Yeah.
The structure of that movie is bananas. It's,
I don't know. And then because I've got the Kidman on the brain thing, like, I thought that the woman who plays his girlfriend looked Kidman-ish.
Okay.
So I was like, nice. And then also, Horace Pinker is not a very good character.
No.
So that kind of dragged it down for me. Like, I think anytime it was Peter Berg talking to his friends and family and stuff like that, and, like, especially, like, the football team and all this stuff, they're like, we got your back. Yeah. I mean, like, I thought all that stuff was great. But, like, anytime Horace Pinker showed up, I was, I mean, I like Mitch Pileggi and other things. It's just, I don't think that this character is really all that interesting. So.
No, I don't either. And it's a weird movie, because it's one of the few times where it's Wes Craven really just trying to be commercial.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he's at his weakest. Mm-hmm. I prefer his movies where he's just completely Swamp Thing is one of those movies. And I don't like outright dislike any of these movies, except maybe Vampire in Brooklyn. Like Vampire in Brooklyn, Shocker, Swamp Thing. He's got a couple where he's really just, and for Shocker, it was obviously to kind of try to reinvent or invent, I should say, another horror icon, because he had gotten screwed so bad on Freddy Krueger. But yeah, it just doesn't.
Yeah, it was kind of.
It's fun, but it doesn't totally work.
Yeah, it was kind of a lull for me in between, you know, like two peaks with Serpent and the Rainbow and People Under the Stairs.
Yeah.
I really like both of those.
Yeah,
This one was just not as good, but it was still worth watching. And then the last one is I watched Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Okay.
And I'm a really big fan of the first two Hellraisers. This one was not great. Like, I was having a lot of trouble with it for the first hour, because a lot of the actors are ADR'd in some weird way.
Okay.
And like, there's just, but there's some bizarre stuff in that that's entertaining, and some bizarre stuff in it that's just like really not great. But like, they've got this character JP Malone, who's like the douchebag du jour of that movie, and he owns this metal club that's like an S&M type club too, but it also has like a fancy restaurant. And I was like so confused, like, what is this thing? And then like they have all these like decorations that make it look like an S&M Portillo's. I'm just like, where someone's just like hanging overhead and whatnot, and he's giving like girls roses and stuff, and like the screenwriter of Wishmaster's the bartender, and it was weird.
That's the one with, like, the big nightclub sequence, right?
Yes. Okay. I wanted to get to that because I like Pinhead as a character. He's fun, but you can't put him in the doorway of a nightclub and inspire terror in everyone. I mean, like, after all the stuff he does, sure. And, like, then that kind of goes right into that street sequence where, like, there's the new Cenobites. The new school,
like CD like Cenobite,
the CD Cenobite, and like the camera Cenobite, and the flamethrower Cenobite, and those are fun, cool.
It's like Cenobites become Garbage Pail Kids,
yeah, pretty much, yeah. But then, like when he just shows up in a doorway, like I would laugh at him if I was like in a club. I would just be like, "What is this guy?" And what's we call it? But there's some redeeming stuff in the last 30 minutes that made it fun. And the thing that I found most interesting was there's a bunch of actors in that movie where I'm like, I've seen them in something before. Like, what have I seen them in? So there's like the second lead female actress in that movie.
Isn't plays Paula Marshall in that movie?
I don't know who Paula Marshall is.
Okay.
It might be who I'm talking about, though.
Okay.
But this woman is married to, at this movie favorite, Danny Nucci.
What?
Yes. And she turns into a Cenobite by the end.
I don't remember this.
And by the end of the movie, I was thinking that Danny Nucci was in a theater in 1992, and he was just like, da na 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 na, Angel is a Cenobite.
It is Paula Marshall.
Yeah.
I know exactly who you're talking about. I don't remember her turning into a Cenobite.
She gives a
very, what kind of a Cenobite is she?
She's like bald, and she's got like, I don't know. Like,
hey, Paula Marshall, where is your hair? You're the Cenobite. I make it the Lament configuration.
Why don't you come into my dominion?
We're making the hell on earth. Coming into the club.
Can make a hella babies and raise them. Can
hella She's married to the Nooch.
Let's hella raise these children.
Paula Nooch?
Yeah, Paula Nooch.
The lead is Jadzia Dax from Deep Space Nine, right?
Sure.
Terry something?
Yeah, Terry something.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like half of a good Hellraiser movie, but it's nowhere near as good as the first two.
Well, because it's the one that really is like trying to be super commercial, is my memory. I maybe have only seen it one time.
Yeah, it was.
And I felt like it was really trying to be commercial.
Yeah, it wasn't New World. It was like Miramax picked it up or
and
something.
And it's
like
got a real early 90s kind of a thing
it's
going
super
on.
Early 90s.
I remember the effects being cool because it's Anthony Hickox, right? And I feel
is that
like
the effects guy?
No, well, he directed it, I think.
Oh yeah.
And so many of his movies are like that movie's not great, but really cool effects, like Warlock 2, which I just watched for the first time, also starring Paula Marshall, aka Mrs. the Nooch, is in Warlock 2. Mm-hmm. Cool effects, not a very good movie. That's Hickox's jam, apparently.
He was like Bella Bambina Cenobite.
Watch out for the warlock.
Hey, Cenobite, I bought you a Cinnabon.
Cinnabite. Surely there are Cinnabites at Cinnabon, right?
You rip my claws off, then you rip my skin
off. They'll tear your hunger apart. They'll tear your sweet tooth apart.
You almost sound like Tommy Wiseau's Cinnabite.
That was a great 7-word review, too, where it was like, Christy, you're tearing me apart. Oh, hi, Pinhead.
Can't wait for the disaster artist.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so I got a real quick list of stuff that I haven't watched yet. I need you to give me, like,
I like this.
Up,
I like this.
Up. All right, so rewatch Halloween H2O.
Yeah.
Okay. Jason Goes to Hell, unrated. I've only seen rated.
Yeah.
The Night Flyer.
Yeah.
Lord of Illusions.
Yeah.
And you said director's cut, not theatrical.
Sure.
Okay. Phantom of the Opera 89.
Dwight H. Little, You My Boy, but put that at the bottom.
Okay.
Even though Jill Sholin is in it. Right?
Abby?
Yeah, because I haven't seen it.
Okay. I'll watch it and I'll lend it to
Thank you.
Thank you. And Wrong Turn.
Put that with Phantom of the Opera also. Have you seen Wrong Turn 2?
No.
It's way better.
Okay.
It's Joe Lynch.
But it does have Dushku.
No. It has a couple other people from, who's the girl from Blair Witch 2? Erica something?
Christensen?
No. Anyway, Henry Rollins and, I don't know. But Wrong Turn 2 is a ton of fun because it's Joe Lynch. Wrong Turn is fine, but it's like, it comes from that period in like the mid 2000s or first decade where it was a lot of movies were trying to feel like 70s horror movies.
Yeah.
So it definitely has that vibe.
Okay.
It's fine. Like, it's watchable, you know, but it's pretty, whatever. You saw The Funhouse at the Music Box of Horrors.
I sure did.
And we haven't talked about it.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to ask how it played.
It played great.
Nice.
Everyone liked it.
Like, happy to hear it.
It was a love fest for the Hooper.
Yeah.
And I almost recommend, like, you've got connections. There's...
Who
the guy who hosted it, Will Morris, I think?
Mike told me about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like a video that he put together.
Yeah.
And you need to find a way to see it.
Yeah, I sure do.
It's incredible.
Mike Piccoli described it to me, and I really want to see it.
Yeah, it's... I mean, that was the thing. Like, I stayed for like 11 hours of the event of the Music Box of Horrors where the Funhouse played. And I mean, like, the thing with it is just all the stuff that they put around these movies. So they did a tribute to George Romero earlier in the day, and it was great. Although they played his segment from Two Evil Eyes and then did not play the rest of Two Evil Eyes. So it was like this hanging.
It's kind
of
weird. Yeah, right.
And I'm like, can we not watch Cat in the Canary and just watch the rest of Two Evil Eyes?
His is the Adrian Barbeau one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it.
Yeah. Have you seen the...
I haven't seen
the Harvey Keitel one.
Yeah, I need to watch half of it so I can, so I can post my 7-word review.
From Dario Argento!
I had to post a 3.5-word review!
I can't wait to work with Dan Nucci!
The Nucci! yes. Dan Nucci! I'm home! Paula Marshall, your wife! Come downstairs! Who's a little sleepy?
So they only speak Italian at home?
Who's a little sleepy Nucci head? Year's Eve, baby.
New Year's Eve.
Holy
shit.
So, yeah, the Funhouse, like, I loved it. I really loved it.
That's awesome.
Time.
That's so good to hear.
I'm eager to... I have the Scream Factory Blu-ray, so nice. I'm eager to watch this features on it and everything. And now it's like, yeah, I kind of... I think I had that thing that some people did where it's just you don't know what to make of Tobe Hooper movies sometimes the first time you see them. And sure. then, like, once you kind of get his thing, like, it's easier to get back into
right,
them on
right,
subsequent
right.
viewings. And I'm like, you know, I fucking like Clive Barker shit. Like, how... why? It's not like Tobe Hooper stuff is any more kind of, you know, risque.
No, it's definitely not.
Than that. So yeah, I think I'll try like Life Force again.
Cool.
And some other stuff too. I've always been pro Texas Chainsaw 1. So Texas Chainsaw 2, there's a lot of pressure on that one because
no,
I know you love
right.
it. So
I do.
Much, so
I love most yeah, of them. Yeah. So, you know.
But no, I mean, like, yeah, you really need to find a way to watch this.
I will try.
It's so good.
Shoot.
Yeah.
Shoot. I'm only going to talk about two movies very briefly. A, because everything I'm watching is for podcasts, and B, because everything I'm watching is for upcoming podcasts. Yeah. So I yesterday did a Stephen King, a JV Stephen King double feature.
Nice.
Tried to make it a hat trick and squeeze Thinner in based on your recent recommendation. Mm-hmm. Couldn't make it work because
okay.
I had to squeeze in a different movie
That's
from a different franchise.
Thinner.
But I watched Sometimes They Come Back.
Never seen it.
And Needful Matheson. Things. Yes.
Okay.
Tom McLaughlin, I don't know how he says it, mm-hmm. Who did Friday the 13th Part 6 and One Dark Night, directed it. It's fine. It feels like a TV movie that is just plucked from a number of Stephen King obsessions. Mm-hmm. So you have a school teacher yep. who moves to a small New England town. Mm-hmm. He has a dead brother whose memory he is haunted by. There are greasers in it.
All the
I mean, it's yeah, really just, yeah. you know, it's based on a short story yeah. and barely stretched out to feature length. It showed on like USA.
Okay.
But then I think overseas played in theaters. There's hardly anything in it, though, that would make it an R-rated movie, which is what I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you're just a fan of Stephen King movies, and I know you are, mm-hmm. like... it's fine.
Yeah, I'll get to
super watchable.
I need to go back into like the TV adaptations.
Yeah.
The one I really want to revisit is The Stand, but I'm worried about how that'll hold up.
Yeah. Well, so. Sometimes They Come Back was not made for TV. It
okay.
was made to be theatrical. It just played on TV first,
gotcha.
Kind of like Riding the Bullet
mm-hmm.
is another one that was meant to be theatrical and ended up premiering on TV. But like The Stand and It and Tommyknockers and Langoliers, mm-hmm. all of those were made for TV.
That might be a good candidate for every year. My mom and I, we do like our own scary movie nights.
Okay.
And we always watch Bubba Ho-Tep.
Nice.
It's become a tradition.
Okay.
We watch a Vincent Price movie because
okay.
we're Vincent Price fans.
Nice.
And then one of her celebrity crushes is Tim Matheson.
Get out of town.
So that could be a
he
good
kinda
one.
He kind of has a mullet going on here.
I don't think he'll care.
Early 90s Tim Matheson. Brooke Adams plays his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Russler shows up as one of the greasers.
It's a good cast.
Yeah. yeah. You know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. How is Needful Things?
Yeah, you know, yeah. not my favorite.
Yeah.
I like the book a lot. And the movie is like, it's just okay. Like it inspires no strong reaction in me one way or the other.
Sure.
It's bizarre how indifferent I am towards it.
Mm-hmm.
We recently recorded an episode of Corpse Club where we were talking about Stephen King adaptations and somebody else named it as a favorite and did mention that there is like a 3-hour cut that exists and shows sometimes on like TBS and TNT.
Hmm.
I would be very curious to see that version.
Yeah.
Maybe it is a better movie. This one's fine.
Okay.
It's hard to get excited about, you know?
Gotcha.
I don't
gotcha.
Know.
So I think that before we get into Candyman,
yeah.
last year we did Tales from the Hood, and then it got a Scream Factory
yes.
Blu-ray release. I had to get like an import Blu-ray for Candyman because there's no U.S. Blu-ray.
I had to buy it on standard def on Vimeo. Not Vimeo.
What?
Vudu.
Really?
You can't rent it on Amazon. You can't rent it on iTunes. You can't even rent it on Vudu. You have to buy it. in standard def.
Yeah, that's not right.
No, so because the DVD you can buy on Amazon for $5. It cost me $10 on Vudu, but I had to buy it because I needed it last night.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't, it wasn't going to show up from Amazon in time.
That's crazy. And this is not a standard def movie.
No.
Anyways, Dr. Giggles or Candyman, I'm calling it. It will be one of the October 31st announcements from Scream Factory.
Oh, that's right.
Candyman 2 was Scream Factory.
Giggles, although, Giggles, they do a lot with Universal, so that's a good guess.
Because Candyman 2, which I will get into that maybe later, it was one movie that I watched for the first time this October. That was like Polygram or something.
Yeah.
It was like one of those weird, like defunct 90s studios. And I think... Oh, yeah, yeah, and Candyman 1 was TriStar, because it has that beautiful unicorn logo thing. That's, like, the best thing ever. Why don't they bring that back?
I don't know.
I don't like your Sony unicorn. I want my old-school unicorn that's running from the darkness like it's in Legend.
I think, or Blade Runner, or not, didn't they insert shots from Legend into Blade Runner then?
Yeah.
How weird. And shots from The Shining. He just keeps
And they inserted shots from 2012 in Blade Runner 2049. It's really weird.
There have been a lot of rumblings online that Scream Factory is working on The Changeling with George C. Scott.
Yeah.
Hasn't officially been announced. That may be the Halloween announcement as well, especially now that it has sort of leaked.
Yeah.
Because that happened with Hell Night. Like, it was sort of a poorly kept secret for weeks before they made it official.
Yeah. I wanted to revisit Misery, but I know that the new Scream Factory is coming out next month, so I'm going to wait for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Candyman.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I think that's four times. Or maybe five times.
Last night, I believe, was the first time I've seen Candyman since 1993.
Wow. Okay.
So I went to see it in theaters in the Woodfield Mall Theater in 1992.
Such a good place to see this movie.
Had super low expectations going in because, again, in the early 90s, it seemed like horror was bad. Now we can look back on it and be like, actually, horror was kind of good and a lot of good movies came out. And so the fact that Candyman came out in 92 is part of that. But I went in with low expectations because it was like, what? A horror movie with hardly any recognizable stars for me. I mean, Virginia Madsen, I guess. Mm. And went to see it with my dad. It was one of our like divorce movies and was really into it for like the first hour.
Yeah.
I was like, this movie is surprisingly good and scary.
Yeah.
And then the projector broke. Mm. Might have been like 75 minutes. The projector broke, and so we left, and I didn't get to see how Candyman ended. And so when it came out on video, I rented it, and I remember that was the last time I saw it, so that would have been probably 93. And I remember feeling like, what? The movie really like goes off the rails in those last 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I thought that. I think it just went in a direction I wasn't expecting with Virginia Madsen's hair getting all burned off and stuff. I was like, what? How is this the end of the movie?
Yeah.
Hadn't seen it since. Mm-hmm. This was my first time seeing it in a long-ass time. Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I haven't seen it many more times than you have. I've probably seen it through cable or video. Like, because the first time I saw it was at a sleepover in 93, like summer of 93. That was like a big... that was a big summer for me in terms of like my horror fandom. That's like when I really went from like just those Universal Monster books and what was on
TV
and stuff to like really getting into a lot of other stuff. It was one of those great sleepover nights where you order a pizza and you start at 7 o'clock and then like you just watch like we watched like. Probably, I'm trying to think of just stuff we watched around that time. It was like maybe Dr. Giggles, maybe Friday the 13th Part 4, like anything you could, Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, like anything you could find at the library. So like, we rented Candyman. I remember specifically from Blockbuster because there was a movie that came out the previous fall and I kind of wanted to see it, but I was too scared at the time. And then like we watched it. So Candyman was the movie that we played around like 2 a.m. and my other friends fell asleep about 20 minutes in. And I watched the whole thing. And the next morning, they're all like, hey, let's go to Great America and stuff and blah, blah, blah. Can your mom drive? I don't know. Maybe if your mom drives back, I don't know. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there like Nicole Kidman at the end of Eyes Wide Shut when, like, Tom Cruise tells her everything, and you're just glassy-eyed and pale and smoking a cigarette and staring out the window. I'm like, you guys don't know what the fuck I've been through, man. Like, Candyman scared the fucking shit out of me, like, the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
And it is still a really unsettling movie, with the exception of one thing, which is Tony Todd. I think Tony Todd removes a lot of the scariness from the movie.
Why?
I don't think that he's scary at all. Like, I think that he... I read that he plays it like... He played it with Phantom of the Opera in mind.
Right, right. He plays it as more of a romantic character.
Yes, and there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
And especially he doubles down on that in, like, Candyman 2. But... I don't think that his... I think it's a combination of the wardrobe they gave him, the hook not really being that scary to me, I guess. Just the way that he looks like a normal tall man to me. I don't think that he's scary. I think his voice is great. Earlier in the month, I rewatched Jacob's Ladder, and there's a scare in that movie where it's just this disembodied voice talking to Tim Robbins, where Tim Robbins thinks that he's like in... kind of like a positive dream where he's reunited with his family. And then you just hear this like really guttural like voice just saying like dream on and stuff like that. And I was thinking, and I feel bad saying this because I've met Tony Todd at a convention. He's a nice guy. I would never want to take away his signature role from him because this is what he's best known for. But at the same time, I almost feel like Candyman would work better if we never saw Candyman, if we just heard Candyman.
Okay.
And like we didn't know if Virginia Madsen was truly going crazy or if there was a reason why all of this was happening. I think the movie's still scary because the violence in it is shockingly gory
yeah.
for like a studio movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the first hour or so of the movie before you see Candyman in the hallway, I think is scarier for a lot of reasons, which we'll get into, I'm sure, as we talk. But I almost think that it kind of makes the movie feel more like a movie and not like this kind of... almost realistic exploration of urban legends with these graduate students
mm-hmm.
that the first half of it makes it.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. I don't have a problem with... I know you're not saying you have a problem with Tony Todd's performance. Like, I don't think the performance is especially good, and that's no knock against Tony Todd, who's a good actor.
Yeah.
I don't think it actually needs to be good. I think it needs to look a certain way and sound a certain way, and mm-hmm. I think he does that.
Yeah.
I kind of like the design for whatever reason. I mean, I think there's a reason that the character became immediately iconic.
Yeah.
And it's not just his portrayal or the design, because so much of the movie is about the iconography of Candyman, right? It's
mm-hmm.
it's myth making that actually works. And you know, talk about Horace Pinker or Shocker, where we see sometimes filmmakers trying to create this legend and it falls short. We've seen it happen a lot of times in horror movies,
mm-hmm.
and Candyman, it actually happens organically, A, because of the story that they're telling, and B, because of the way that they kind of realized the character of Candyman. I think this is another case, you know, Elric Kane from Shockwaves is famous for saying that had they not made a bunch of Nightmare on Elm Street sequels, that the original Elm Street would be like the scariest movie ever made.
Yep.
And I'm not saying Candyman would be the scariest movie ever made, but the fact that it becomes something of a franchise, even though I think there were only two sequels.
Yeah, there's one theatrical sequel and one direct-to-video.
You know, the 90s were a weird time in terms of franchises because you had Hellraiser still going, you had Leprechaun still going, mm-hmm. you had Wishmaster, you had... but even Wishmaster was only one movie in the 90s, right?
The second one was 99.
Okay.
So, but barely.
And Candyman. So you see a lot of, like, trying to create these long-running franchises like there had been in the 80s, but in most cases, I don't think it works. I think I've seen two. I think I've seen three. Mm-hmm. I don't remember either one of them.
Yeah.
So this is a movie that I feel like maybe should have just been left alone.
I think that, it would be more resonant or powerful, I guess is a better word, if it was just a single movie. Candyman 2 is interesting in the sense that I like that it's set in New Orleans, which has like a very, like, one of the things that's great about the original Candyman is just the atmosphere is so palpable.
Yeah.
In Candyman 2, same thing with New Orleans. It's very threatening.
Isn't that cheating, though, to change the location?
It is, because they changed the backstory around a little bit. Yeah, because, same. Like, part of the stuff in Candyman was about Candyman's ashes being spread throughout Cabrini Green.
Right.
But then in Candyman 2, they kind of go and make the story about how he's from, like, a rich family in New Orleans. So they kind of tweak with the backstory. And Candyman 2 is a weird movie because the first hour is, like, basically like a slasher movie like you would expect if this were Candyman 5.
Right.
And then it's all building to the same backstory visualized that the guy at the beginning of Candyman 2 tells Virginia Madsen about Candyman, with a few details changed.
Okay.
So it's like an interesting looking movie.
Okay.
And it's very watchable. And
it's Bill Condon, right?
It's Bill Condon. So yeah. It looks great. I mean, it's like a usual, I haven't seen Gods and Monsters, which I understand is like really good.
But it is good.
For most Bill Condon movies, they look great and they're kind of empty. And this is what Candyman 2, Farewell to the Flesh, is. So with Candyman 1, I mean, like, that atmosphere of Cabrini Green, and one thing that I'm going to be, I'll just say, you know, just to get out of the way, I'm very uncomfortable really, like, diving into, like, the Cabrini Green aspect of it, because I feel like I have heard about it, and I knew, like, even at 10 years old, that place was notorious. And,
sure.
But I have no right to psychologically, like, evaluate that, because all I know about it is what the Wikipedia page I read tells me about it. And I understand kind of around the edges about the Reagan era with public housing and about gentrification and things like that. So if you want something kind of coming from that angle in, like, really greater depth, Anya Novak liked or retweeted an article recently. It was called Horror Black Academics, Candyman's Revenge on Gentrification. It's really interesting. There's a few things I'll mention later on that I feel comfortable talking about,
sure.
But I really don't want to talk about, like, just because I don't feel like I have the right to in a lot of ways. But what I can say is I know they shot it at Cabrini Green, and that place is very scary, and that is scarier than any horror icon could ever be.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the way that they take that and they use it to manifest this urban legend, this larger than life monster. I think it's very clever in the way that it does that. And it's interesting too, because Clive Barker's novel took place in England, and they decided to transplant it.
It was just a short story, I think, which I read, and it was like, it wasn't until maybe a third of the way through it where I realized, oh wait, this is Candyman, you know. It's interesting to hear them talk about Cabrini Green as people who grew up in and or near Chicago in a very early 90s kind of way, because it's not something that's really talked about anymore, because things have changed around there somewhat.
Yeah, it's been revamped in this Gold Coast neighborhood.
Exactly. But it's a very kind of early 90s way that they talk about it, in a way that makes it accessible to the rest of the country, if not the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're talking about it the way, like, Martians might sometimes talk about it, whereas when we talk about it, it's in much more of a familiar way, I guess. I read a couple things about the movie, and some of them were talking about the issues of race at the time. And that there was a concern that perhaps black audiences were going to be unhappy with the fact that here is this black character who is the boogeyman, basically, who's being represented on screen in this way as a psychotic murderer with a mouthful of bees. Mm-hmm. And by the way, how great is that? Like,
I did you read that? They specifically got bees without stingers so he didn't get stung, but then he ended up getting stung like tons of times.
I mean, it's one of those things. JB always talks about Buster Keaton when he says, how do they do that? And his answer is like, well, they did it. And that's the thing with the bees. Like, how do they do that with the bees? Well, Tony Todd put a bunch of fucking bees in his mouth, you know, God bless him.
Now we can only eat Honey Nut Cheerios.
In the early 90s, I guess I can understand that position more. It's hard to put myself in that mindset now, because in the early 90s, you weren't getting as many, not that we get enough now, but you weren't getting as many representations of black people on screen.
Yeah.
And so if one of the few that you get is like, well, there's these disenfranchised people living in Cabrini Green, and then there's this psychotic murderer with a hook hand. Sure, I guess maybe you're not happy about it. But in 2017, I feel more like it's great that there's, a black horror icon, you know, at least one. There should be more, but at least there is Candyman. And race plays such a major part in the movie, I think in both good and bad ways.
Okay.
Because at the end of the film, okay, again, maybe this is uncomfortable to talk about. I don't know.
I feel like we can't avoid it with this conversation,
right,
but
right.
I wanted just to kind of say up front, because I mentioned on our anniversary show recently that like my least favorite episode of mine that I have done with you was the Tales from the Hood one, and I think that was because I was always having the push-pull of, do I have the right as a white man to be talking about black social issues with any type of insight or... not definitely not authority, but like any type of insight. Do I really have the right to do that? But I think that's so much of what this movie is kind of about in a lot of ways from the Virginia Madsen character's perspective, that it's almost like if you own up to it, you can have the conversation.
Well, right. You just acknowledge like this is not the experience that I have had, but then to just ignore it, I feel like is to be part of the problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of my concern, and maybe this was a deliberate choice, or maybe it was just the economics of early 90s Hollywood. I think this movie works better if they reverse Virginia Madsen and Casey Lemons.
Okay.
I have problems with, and again, I understand it's written into the backstory, Candyman had fallen in love with a white woman, and then that's why he was essentially murdered. So I understand that. But when we get to the end of the film, and I get spoilers for Candyman, I guess, Virginia Madsen's character dies, there is a funeral, and suddenly a line of
residents
of Cabrini Green, all of them African-American, come up to this funeral to pay their respects to this white woman. I was like, this isn't working for me as much.
One thing that I thought, and this comes straight out of that article, again, it's Horror Black Academics, Candyman's Revenge on Gentrification.
Okay.
It's by, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your names, Aviva Briefel and C.N. Nagai or Guy. And one of the things they were mentioning was they see it almost as Helen, which is Virginia Madsen's character, becoming the new Candyman.
Right.
It's almost like tipping the hat at the gentrification of these urban public housing areas, where it's like she's forcing out the black Candyman,
right.
And the white Candyman is now what is haunting you and what is going to be your doom. It is the harbinger of doom for people of non-white race.
And that's a great reading of it, and I'm much more comfortable reading it that way in 2017.
Yeah.
In 92, I don't know if that's what they're going. And maybe it doesn't matter. Again,
well,
death of the author.
Well, you have to be like seeing into the future to be able to say that, yeah.
Death of the author and all of that. So I can't say that reading is wrong, but to me it feels more like, hey, we better reclaim this horror series back for white people.
Yeah.
Which I'm not as comfortable with. But I do like the idea of him being this urban legend that is specifically talked about in this housing project, that is specifically talked about amongst black people, and the idea that he was a former slave. Yes?
He was the son of a slave and an artist.
Okay.
So, but in Candyman 2, they get more into it where he, I think, was...
Well, he said he was the son of, like, rich people.
Yeah, he was, like... I keep forgetting, but I think it wasn't that he was like ever a slave. It was, he had like a skill for being an artist, like a portrait artist. And that gave him a certain amount of acclaim within the white community where he, as long as he stayed in his boundaries and stuff like that, he was accepted as not a slave.
Okay. But he was the son of a slave.
He was the son of a slave.
I knew that slavery...
He was born on a slave plantation.
Okay, see, and I knew that slavery played a role in this, because that's one of the things that I really like about it, that they go out of their way to mention that, and this idea that that memory, that awful memory mm-hmm. of that period in American history haunts not just this housing complex, but all Black people, mm-hmm. and that white people remain outside of that memory.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That it is specific to their experience, and we can all look at it and say, oh God, that's awful. But that's 100% relevant in 2017 yeah. because that's Helen kind of all lives mattering this whole situation, you know?
Yeah.
Candyman becomes almost the physical embodiment of the memory of the American Holocaust of slavery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were getting into that article about how this movie can be read as like a punishment for her imposition on a place that she... This is from the article word for
okay.
word. A punishment for her imposition on a place she does not occupy.
Where, right.
Which I find really interesting.
I do too. Yeah. And that's I think, maybe why that funeral scene at the end, to me, rings a little false.
It rings of
because she has been
your thing
exactly because she had saved yeah. the baby, and that's why they're yeah. there. That's why it rings false to me. That
yeah, I just talking outside of like the subtext of them and the themes of the movie.
Yeah.
That scene where there's the bonfire where they're burning
yes
in effigy the Candyman to get rid of the memory of it, or help to hopefully rid them of the curse of it in the project housing is or the public housing. Imagine, all right, just imagine if you were like a resident there, you were standing there, this is what you were doing, and then all of a sudden this woman on fire with a baby comes out. Like a white woman on fire with a baby comes out.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I was thinking that this time I'm just like, I'm like really caught up in like the drama of it. I'm like, if I saw that would fucking like, I would move for no, I'm like, I've seen some scary shit in this place, but that takes the cake.
I felt so bad too, because on a technical level, I was so distracted by some bad stunt wigging
yeah.
during that sequence. I'm like, no, I should really be feeling the emotional impact of this moment. And instead I'm just like, stunt wig.
Yeah.
But that the establishing shots of the bonfire with the yeah. Philip Glass music.
The Philip Glass
amazing.
Music is just such an inspired choice, I think, for the movie.
It changes the movie. Yeah. And they just yeah. mentioned this. Do you listen to Pure Cinema?
No, not all.
So on the most recent episode of Pure Cinema, they were talking specifically about horror movie music, mm-hmm. and they brought up the Candyman score, and I think it was Rob G that said, or Elric, that said, like, yeah, the score transforms it. It makes it classy. It makes it elegant.
Yep.
And that's exactly right. And they also say that Philip Glass was not happy with the use of his score.
Yeah, he thought that they were making, like you said, he just didn't see it. He thought that they were making a classier horror movie, and then when he saw the movie, he thought that it was just your stock and trade slasher. He didn't see it for more than
it was.
Oh,
it's not that at all.
But it's been, I think around the early 2000s, he kind of took it back.
Oh, good.
And he
okay.
was saying like, and now it's like a really, for him, I guess it was like a best-selling score, and like it's very popular. And
it's yeah, amazing.
He's done other scores in other movies that have been great too. But this score, I mean, like it's... so when I was recently, I re-listened to you and Eric England's podcast on Scream.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things that
you're
said,
welcome.
Thank you.
thank you, Eric England.
So one of the things that he said that was really brilliant, I never realized, and now I can't unsee, which is good, is in the opening scene where Drew Barrymore picks up the phone, the first time it's not a canted angle in any way. It's straightforward. But then like the second time she picks up the phone, it's canted a little bit to make sure that the audience has like that visual subconscious language of something is a skew.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what the Candyman score does with the Philip Glass music is for whatever reason, I don't know if everybody feels this way, but I've always found like classical organ or piano music to be very lulling and like lulling you in and very inviting and things like that. And it's like inviting you into this environment that normally you would kind of not want to be mm-hmm. invited into. And then also it takes this story that's very kind of, you know, just city. It's a very like city, like street kind of story, and it makes it kind of ethereal in a way, and it's such like a juxtaposition that it makes it scarier, because it's like you almost don't know how to classify it, like how to kind of handle it as a viewer, as a horror movie viewer, because it's so different from how this type of story is usually told.
I also think it highlights the fact that this is a very beautiful movie.
Yeah.
I think it's really beautifully shot, even when it's shooting sort of economically deprived or depressed areas. I think that, you know, the Tony Todd performance is very larger than life, and the way he is photographed is very beautiful. Even the moments of like the bees and the kissing with the bees are very beautiful. The bonfire of garbage is very beautiful. Yeah. And it reminds you that this is, that surprises me about Philip Glass, whatever, but like that this movie is something special. I think it calls attention to the fact that the movie is something special.
Yeah.
And that it's, I am teaching a film class, and we've been focusing on horror all month long. And so we did 1 week on Asian horror films. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about how a lot of Asian horror films focus on either ghosts or revenge, and sometimes both, and how it's this focus on cultural memory that runs through a lot of the Asian horror films. And Candyman is very much about that too. It's very much about cultural collective memory, not in the way that like A Nightmare on Elm Street is, which is like, oh, our parents did this bad thing and now it's back to punish us. Mm-hmm. It's more about the idea of keeping an idea alive, which I find so fascinating, that it's a movie that works on an idea level so well, while also I think functioning very viscerally when it needs to. As you said, it's pretty hardcore when it wants to be.
Yeah.
And that juxtaposition is also very shocking and off-putting in the best way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a really, like, even if everything doesn't always gel together, there's so much just kind of going on below the surface too, that it's never anything less than like completely impressive. With I'm a big fan of Clive Barker adaptations, but this is, I think this is probably my favorite.
Okay.
It's really strong.
It's really strong. And again, I hadn't seen it in over 20 years.
There's a lot of stuff in that movie too, that like just, it doesn't give you any type of buffer in really a lot of ways. And I'm thinking most specifically about, you know, at the ending, like when Virginia Madsen becomes the new Candyman and she kills Xander Berkeley, and his new girlfriend opens the door and he's just like eviscerated and in the bathtub and everything like that. And then basically it's just like that shot ends and it goes right into the end credits, which is a zoom in to this new mural of Katniss Everdeen, the girl on fire. and then the credits go.
She's like, Ghost Rider.
Yeah, and you have to, like, and you're sitting there while the end credits are going.
Skull's on fire.
I don't know enough about Ghost Rider.
That was my Nicolas Cage impression. It was actually my impression of Mike doing a Nicolas Cage impression.
Yeah. I remember being distracted in that movie because the girl playing young Eva Mendes looks so much like Eva Mendes.
Yes.
I was just like, what is happening here? Yeah, I mean, like, so then the credits roll, and there's no, like, breathing room from it.
Right.
So you're just sitting in that. And Candyman 2 also has a end credit scene that's, like, it's more of, like, an ironic punchline type thing, but it's really strong, too, but right before it goes to the credits. So that's one thing I really liked about it. I also think that the movie's kind of scary. And I'm never going to like qualify it as like, oh, this is why it's scarier than all those other horror movies. Like, because I don't believe that. But I think it is scarier to me than a lot of other horror movies because so much of it takes place in the daylight.
Okay.
It's not, you know, it's very atmospheric, but it doesn't depend on darkness except when they're going kind of through the walls of some of these old apartment buildings and stuff like that, or apartment rooms. A lot of it is just like, it's just saying like, it's scary all the time here. Mm-hmm. It's like you're never safe. It's always threatening and whatnot. And it's almost interesting, too, that the environment is so kind of suffocating and scary that, like, Candyman is almost like a way to psychologically, like, kind of deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost right. like it's something right, right, right. to blame.
Exactly.
It's something to point the finger at.
Exactly.
It's something, a way to make sense of,
exactly.
of all of it.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, like, there's just so much with that, I think, that's interesting. One thing I had a question for you about that I noticed this time around was this has a trope in it that I know that you're not a big fan of, and I was wondering how you handled it, which is the people wrongfully accused thing. Like, how does that bug you in this movie?
Not terribly. Okay. I will admit that... It's not that Virginia Madsen is bad in the movie at all. She's totally fine. But I find myself least interested in her entire storyline.
Yeah.
So at the point where she's strapped down to a gurney and she's yelling stuff, I'm like, I don't totally care. Like,
yeah.
I don't feel as much of the frustration of like, oh my God, someone just listen to her, believe her, even though I know she's telling the truth. Although I have to ask you something about that. I know that she's telling the truth and she is wrongfully accused, but I find myself more distracted by the fact that I don't care.
Yeah.
If I cared more, it would bother me more, mm-hmm. because it would bother me that no one was listening to her, but I'm just like, I'm kind of irritated. And again, she's fine, but it's just, I don't feel like she's the correct vessel through which to experience this story, which is why I just was like, just swap her and Casey Lemons, and it's so much more interesting.
Yeah, I could see what you're saying. I think part of what helped me with getting on Virginia Madsen's side a little bit on this viewing of Candyman is I watched Candyman 2 first. And the lead in that movie is, like, no Virginia Madsen, so I...
By the third one, it's Gina Lee Nolan, so they're going full Baywatch.
Yeah, when I reboot it, it'll be Tammy Lauren, so there you go.
I think, I like how this movie, you know, you had said it's scary because it takes place in the daylight. I think, you know, did you grow up doing, like, Bloody Mary?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that. Candyman is basically just meshing together Hookman,
right.
which is an urban legend, and
right.
Bloody Mary.
Right.
And I did Bloody Mary a bunch
right.
of times, and I was always disappointed I wasn't savagely murdered.
So I think it's interesting that it's a horror that you sort of recognize because like we did Bloody Mary, and it's a particular horror that you can take home with you. So it's not like when you watch a Friday the 13th, you're going to run out in the woods and be like, Jason's going to get us.
Mm-hmm.
But you go home from this and you definitely try saying Candyman 5 times into a mirror.
Yeah.
Like it's that kind of thing you take with you. And it works on this idea of urban legends in a way that's like so much deeper and more interesting than, I don't know, the movie Urban Legend or its sequel Urban Legends Final Cut, which isn't even about urban legends at all. It's just about movies.
Mm-hmm.
That I should be comparing these two franchises, but I just think it's a really interesting movie about... New Nightmare sort of works with a lot of these same ideas. Why do we tell these stories? What mm-hmm. purpose do they serve? It's sort of exercising our fears in this way, as you said, the Candyman is a way of processing certain feelings about the, I won't say the entire black experience in America, but certainly those residents of Cabrini Green who are living in that environment, the Candyman becomes a way of processing that. And Candyman, the movie, becomes a metaphor for how we process our own fears, you know? So it's a movie about how we deal with fears through this iconography.
Yeah.
Which is what horror movies are.
Yeah. I always find that like really interesting because that was like, if you talk about like what scares you in real life, like, things like urban legends or just random shit that people will say to, like, when I was growing up, like, I remember there was one time I got pushed into a plant and there was like a puff of like powdery stuff from the plant, and it was like, I don't know, like what was in it. But somebody told me, and I was at baseball practice, and somebody pushed me in there because we were just horsing around, and somebody said, oh no, you're probably gonna die because you fell in that. And then I made up in my head how long it would take me to die from this. And I remember, like, as a child, like, the night before I thought I was going to die, where I was just like, this is it.
Oh, boy.
And, like, being,
just
so in your head about it. Or, like, I remember chain letters, like, where somebody would leave a chain letter in your mailbox and said, like, you had to send the chain letter to, like, 10 other people or something terrible was going to happen to you. And I would totally, like, buy that. Or like even when I was in my fucking 20s, like I remember I went to like a fortune teller on a goof with some friends, and this woman, the fortune teller, told me, she's just like, oh, you have a dark cloud of negative energy hanging over you. And I said, what can I do to get rid of it? And she goes, oh, you have to give me like $100 on like these special candles and stuff. And then I said, and these are my immortal words, I'll take my chances. And then ever since then, my life has been kind of fucked in a lot of ways. So, I mean, like, there's a lot of this shit that, like, I really buy into. So, I think that, I don't know. And my friends are like, you should go back to the fortune teller to reverse the curse. And I'm just like, what if she's in league with the other one? So, I don't know.
I could not place where I knew the mother of the baby until the end credits.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Vanessa Williams from New Jack City. Yeah. And I was like, rock-a-bye, baby.
Yeah. And then I don't know what this is. This is like Ted Raimi month for me because I saw him in Blood Rage. Random. I saw him in Blood Rage. He's in Shocker, and he looks exactly like Tobey Maguire and Spider-Man. It's really weird.
It was super random that he showed up in this.
Here he's like Raimi without a cause, like coming up on like...
I just don't know. I mean, whatever. I get why that sequence is there, but it doesn't serve much of a purpose.
No, it's just like an entry into like the...
Here's somebody telling the story, right.
And it's also distracting because that woman is like... I have this weird thing where I kind of am attracted to women who sort of look birdish a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
she definitely
kinda,
has
I'm like, yeah, she's
avian
like,
bones.
She's definitely like
hollow bones.
Gives me the avian flu. but it was weird that he's just showing up in like everything.
He was a real player. I don't like the ending.
Okay.
I don't like the Xander Berkeley back in the apartment, Virginia Madsen appears to him. Again, I don't mind the idea of that she has somehow been absorbed into the urban legend. Mm-hmm. I think it only works sort of as a reading from that article that you were talking about, because in terms of the story mechanics, I don't think it makes any sense.
Yeah, because she's almost like she defeated him.
And Candyman existed, like, as a way of making people afraid. I don't know. He represented something larger. She doesn't. She's just this, like, random white woman graduate student who doesn't represent anything larger and kills her husband because he cheated on her, not because he says her name five times. I don't know. The subplot with him cheating and her getting revenge is supposed to somehow be cathartic for us, I think, because, like, well, he cheated. He's an asshole. He's Xander Berkeley. He's always an asshole. He deserves to die.
Yeah.
It just, to me, it smacked of like a bad horror movie trope where we have to have one more big scare or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I found it terrifying when I first saw it, and I still think it's creepy. So like I'm good with it, but I get what you're saying. Yeah.
I like the dissolve into the painting, and I like the fact that her hair is still burned away, and the reveal of Xander Berkeley's body is very brutal. Again, I appreciate the brutality of all the kills, which is one of the reasons that the hook works for me, because you really see it fuck some people up.
Speaking of the scenes where it fucks some people up, it fucks the psychiatrist up the most.
Although, that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, because that moment when he flies out the window is so great.
I got to talk to you about that, because yes, I agree with you. It is fantastic, but in 1992 or 93 or whenever I saw it, I think that it would have been even better than it is post The Rock, because now I'm just like, he's the Rocket Man.
You're the Rocket Man.
I'm like, he's been Rocket Manning all decade.
I thought you were going to say it scared you so badly, and I was going to tell you the perfect way to cope with it is when you watch it and he flies out the window, just out loud go, wee! And it will never be scary to you again, ever.
Or she'll just be like, wee! What a predicament. I appreciate Virginia Madsen's blonde ambition to her hairdo. Did you know that Eddie Murphy was in the running to be Candyman? Or they wanted him for Candyman?
I think that would have been such a mistake.
It would have been the biggest mistake ever.
I've seen Eddie Murphy be good in dramatic roles, right? He was good in Dreamgirls, whatever. Who gives a shit? I don't really like the movie Dreamgirls. Mm-hmm. But I've also seen him in Vampire in Brooklyn, where it's like, take me seriously.
Yeah.
And I don't think it works. And I think that's the Eddie Murphy we would have got in Candyman. I think the fact that it's Eddie Murphy would have pulled us out of it every single time. I think the fact that Tony Todd was relatively unknown at the time really helps.
Eddie Murphy would have had to have been in so many more scenes in it, too.
Yes. So, and he would have just been, like, making jokes.
Yeah.
Candyman, like, stabs you with a hook and then puts a banana in your tailpipe. And then he's just like,
Yeah.
Let me ask you about the end, because, again, I'm not crazy about the scene, but whatever. It's fine. You know, it's all part of the movie. But here's something that I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Because when the woman that he's sleeping with, that who, and they're painting their apartment pink, like, that's bananas. And then Virginia Manson's whole thing is just she throws more pink paint on the wall. They should have been like, thanks. That actually helped us. But
are you sure you're not still mad?
How about you grab a roller, too?
Yeah.
When she approaches the door and she's screaming, she's holding a big-ass knife.
Yeah.
Why?
Because she was cutting up the steak.
Correct. Correct.
To put in a salad.
But you don't think that that's Bernard Rose suggesting something else?
That she's going through the same journey that Virginia Madsen went through? Is that it?
The movie never officially comes down on, like, Candyman is real and it's not Virginia Madsen doing these killings, correct? I mean, we see Candyman.
Yeah.
Nobody else does.
Yeah, yeah.
So if the idea is, hey, maybe... I don't know. When I saw that knife in her hand, I was like, oh, this feels like the movie saying, yeah, maybe Virginia Madsen did kill those people. And I don't know. I mean, it doesn't make it a better movie. I just thought it was such a conscious choice to put that giant fucking knife in her hand.
I think it could be that, or it could just be that Virginia Madsen's killing these people because she's the new Candyman. And
well, now she is, but I'm saying beforehand.
No, but like the woman was holding the knife in the hand to make the thing.
Right. But they could have just as easily...
But why would she just go to the bathroom with a knife?
Exactly. That's
no,
what I'm
like
saying.
She needed a reason to be holding the knife to begin with. Like, she couldn't just, like, hear a scream and then say, I'm going to pick up a knife and then walk to the bathroom.
Correct. But I'm saying the reverse should have been true. She would have put the knife down and then gone to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well...
I think the decision...
You kind of can have it both ways.
Yeah. I'm not saying that Candyman's not real. I just thought the decision to have her holding that giant knife was not coincidental.
I had such a... I was so distracted by that scene because the way she's holding the knife before that is really weird. It's like she doesn't realize that... It's like, yeah, it's a rubber knife in real life, but it's, you're not supposed to pretend like it's a rubber knife. She's like smacking her hand
right.
with like the sharp blade.
She's the worst.
Anyways. So a few years ago, I went to a flashback weekend where Tony Todd was signing autographs, and I've got a good Tony Todd story.
Let's hear it.
So I, maybe the same year, could have been maybe a year before, it was at the Music Box Massacre where Clive Barker was there.
Yes, I remember that.
I had a Candyman poster that I bought there. Got a really good deal on it. I got Clive Barker to sign it, and it was really cool.
That's awesome.
And then cut to the next year where I'm meeting Tony Todd, I had a Hatchet poster because it was one of those posters where it's like perfect for a convention. You could get like all these people to sign it.
Right.
So I was like, okay. So I got him to sign it. He's at his table with his brother, who I think is like a twin or identical twin. It was weird. It was cool, but it was weird. And they were burning incense, which I love. I love incense. So I just was like, I'm going to hang out here and talk because it smells awesome over here. It smells like patchouli and candy, man. So I'm there. I'm talking to him. I'm telling him about how I just met Clive Barker and how he was really nice and like how much I love Candyman and everything like that. So he just looks up at me and he goes, you have a Candyman poster signed by Clive Barker? And I said, yeah. And he's like, signs my Hatchet poster, and then he slides it over to me. He's like, you should have brought that. And I was just like, oh, man, I made Candyman upset. And now Candyman is like you said with Freddy Krueger. The power is completely taken away because you could do like a photo op of Tony Todd dressed as Candyman
at
any convention.
Right. He's one of these sort of horror icons, which is great for Tony Todd and his career. And I'm glad that he was able to sort of build a career on appearing in other horror films.
No, I mean, like, all power to him. And like, I feel
But it does
bad.
Rob.
Yeah.
the character of his power.
A little, yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
So have you ever gotten the Candyman poster signed by Tony Todd?
No.
What? I mean...
You should.
Yeah, at this point.
Yeah.
I have a Hatchet 2 poster signed by most of the big people involved, but not Tony Todd. And I'm like, if I ever get another person sign it, it would be Tony Todd, but maybe I'm better off just having, like, the ones that I have. You
Is
know?
It framed already?
I could take it out.
No.
Yeah. Right.
No.
Speaking of Hatchet and Adam Green, he's talked before about working with Tony Todd because he was in the Hatchet movies and he was on at least one episode of Holliston, maybe two. Mm-hmm. And he said Tony Todd's process is super weird and that he tries every possible version of anything. He'll pick up every single prop that's on the set. He'll be touching things and just doing so much weird shit. He said his process is he just keeps doing stuff until he finds it. And I'm just so fascinated by that idea of Tony Todd just like picking things up on the set and being a giant weirdo, because I've always suspected Tony Todd is kind of a giant weirdo.
Yeah, I just picture him being like a ladder. A Werner ladder. A Werner ladder. What if I were to say it's a Werner ladder?
Who wins in a fight, Candyman or Wishmaster?
Wishmaster.
Okay.
He would obliterate him. He did in Wishmaster.
That's true. Virginia Madsen beat beat Candyman. So
yeah.
He's no match for.
I want to do a remake of Candyman. It's going to start
Please don't.
Me as Candyman.
All right. I'm into it. I'm back on board.
Alejandra as Virginia Madsen.
Okay. This is interesting.
And it'll be called Candyman : Hot Dogs in a Ball Game.
Okay.
And the whole time I'm just going to be dressed as Candyman, but doing Wishmaster voice.
Okay.
And I'm going to be like, Alejandra.
That's it.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. And then instead of Candyman, I'll be like, I can't be like Risky Man. So I was thinking like Risky Yo, because I say yo a lot.
Okay.
So they're like Risky Yo, Risky Yo.
Sounds like that douche from Hook.
That's Candyman's favorite Spielberg movie.
What?
Hook.
All right. Jesus. Somehow I didn't put that together because I'm the worst person alive.
Oh, speaking of like all these sleepovers I had and stuff like that. So sometimes with that same group of friends, it was always my friends Frank and Travis. We would just watch. We'd play Tecmo NBA basketball on Nintendo. We'd eat pizza in a bucket and we would watch horror movies all night. And like there was one time we went over to Travis's, and Travis was originally from Georgia and then he had moved to like suburban Chicagoland area. And his grandmother lived with them, and she was very Southern, and it used to scare me like a little bit. She would like make up words for stuff. Like instead of remote, it was the changer, instead of the light switch, it was the flicker. And I had to like know that this was the thing.
Right.
And I remember there was one night we watched something else and it was like also scary. And we were watching it in Travis's basement. And I came up from the basement to go like use the bathroom or something like that. And then just out of the darkness, she's like, who's there? Who's there? And I was just like, ah! And I like, ran downstairs. A lot of fond memories from that era.
Era. Anything else about Candyman you want to bring up?
No. Oh, we got
it's a good movie. I wish it would get a Blu-ray release, even though I just spent $10 to watch it in standard def. So maybe hold off a little while on the Blu-ray release, guys.
You can borrow my import anytime you want.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Remember to check out all of our Scary Movie Month content over at fthismovie.com. Find all of our past episodes there by clicking on the podcast tab, or hear us in iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find podcasts. Hit us up on Twitter at FThisMovie or on Facebook. We're on Instagram, but we don't do much with it because who has time? Keep those 7-word reviews coming. We've got just under a week left in Scary Movie Month. I'm very sad that it is wrapping up.
Yeah. Being out of town for a block of it definitely like accelerated the process.
Right.
But I've watched 33 movies so far. So I feel like I've done
not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, I'm going to do 31. And by the way, 31 is hard, like doing one a day. So I don't mean to scoff at 31, but like it's Scary Movie Month. Let's set our sights a little higher, everyone.
Yeah. And a special call out. Alejandra, what if I were to tell you that I'll watch Practical Magic if you post 7-word reviews?
She did post a few, so thank you. Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. We will talk to you again soon.
Helen, the girl on fire.
Listening to FS Movie.